Continuing with chapter 27 of Miklos Nisley's Auschwitz, a doctor's eyewitness account. It was 9 a.m. when Dr. Mengele left the dissecting room. I had the body placed on the table. I would have completed the autopsy in 30 or 40 minutes if it had not been October 6th, the last day but one of the Sonderkommando's allotted lifespan. We weren't certain of anything, but I felt the imminence of death. Since I was unable to work, I left the dissecting room and went to my room, planning to take a healthy dose of sleeping tablets. I smoked cigarette after cigarette, my nerves completely shot. Unable to stay put, I crossed into the incineration room, where I found the Sonderkommando crew working half-heartedly, despite the fact that several hundred bodies were stacked up in front of the ovens. Small groups had formed, and the men were talking in whispers. I went upstairs to the commando's living quarters and immediately noticed that something was amiss. Normally, after morning muster and breakfast, the night shift turned in. Now, however, at 10 o'clock, everyone was still up. I also noticed that they were dressed in sport clothes with sweaters and boots, although the room was bright with a warm October sun. Here, too, many of the men were huddled, talking in whispers, while others moved about feverishly, arranging and packing their clothes in suitcases. It was obvious that some sort of plot was being hatched. But what? I entered the small room that housed the commando chief and found the various leaders of the night shift seated around the table, the engineer, the mechanic, the head chauffeur, and the chief of the gas commando. No sooner had I taken my seat when the commando chief took an almost empty bottle from the table and poured me a large glass of brandy. It was a strong Polish eau de vie, the famous Kumin brandy. I downed my glass in one gulp. Now, in the waning hours of the commando's fourth month, it might not be a life-prolonging elixir, but it was nonetheless an excellent remedy for dulling the fear of death. My comrades presented me with a detailed account of our situation. All evidence seemed to indicate that the Sonderkommando's liquidation would not take place before the following day, and perhaps even the day after. But careful plans had been made for the 860 members of the commando to try and force their way out of the camp. The break was scheduled for that night. Once out, we would head for the loop of the Vistula 2 kilometers away. At this time of year, the river was very low and could easily be forded. 8 kilometers from the Vistula, there were vast forests extending to the Polish border, in which we should be able to live for weeks, even months, if necessary, in relative safety. Or perhaps we would run into some partisans along the way. Our supply of weapons was adequate. During the preceding few days, a shipment of about 100 boxes of high explosives had reached the camp, sent from the Unio factories of Auschwitz, a munitions plant that employed Polish Jews as workers. The Germans used it for blowing up railroad lines. Besides this stock, we had 5 machine guns and 20 hand grenades. "This should suffice," said one of the group. "With the element of surprise on our side, we can disarm the guards using only our revolvers. Then we'll take the SS by surprise in their dormitories and force them to come with us until we have no further use for them." The signal to attack would be given by flashlight signals from No. 1 crematorium. No. 2 would immediately transmit the signal to No. 3, which would in turn alert No. 4. The plan seemed all the more feasible to me for the simple reason that the only crematorium working was No. 1, and even it would knock off work at 6 p.m., which meant that the Sonderkommando night shift would not go on duty that evening. Whenever this happened, The SS guards tended to relax their vigil. There were 3 SS guards in each crematorium. We adjourned the meeting until the evening, the order being that, until the moment the signal was given, everyone should accomplish his task as usual, scrupulously avoiding any act liable to arouse suspicion.